A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Story time.
This story was told to me by an uncle who is a park ranger in Ontario. He frequently comments on his work being relatively calm after pandemic, mostly because there have been fewer tourists, but he still has to go out into the wilderness and check on his stuff. One day, he had to go through the woods with a colleague due to reports of people hanging around without permission. It was nothing unusual, just some visitors who were sometimes mean, especially teenagers. The issue with these reports was that there were numerous sightings of people carrying all sorts of luggage, like axes and animal skulls, just weird stuff. People can be pretty racist in these parts. It's possible these were the Algonquin people. After all, this is their land. Imagine unhinged people worshipping Odin in the cold wilderness of modern-day Canada. Aside from whatever occult stuff they were involved in, according to my uncle, you can find many loons, madmen, and weird people in the woods. There were reports of bonfires, which truly worried the rangers. Nobody was in the mood to deal with a fire in the middle of a health apocalypse, especially considering past events in California and the Amazonian jungle. Canada may be cold, but nobody wanted to see mass fires provoked by mad people. So, they hiked across the wilderness, checking on the state of trails, seasonal animals, vegetation, and other such things. The further they advanced, the more they began to find strange things, odd symbols carved into tree crusts, residues such as trash. Those weird Odin worshippers didn't mind eating modern-day snacks, it seemed, marks on the ground, and small signals indicating people camping in places where they shouldn't be, not open to the general public. My uncle and his colleague, let's call him John, never encountered campers. Whoever was going around had already left. But they always found weird stuff, like a cape, helmet, and even a real sword once. Someone had been putting on some Nordic cult stuff or something like that. There would also be incense and some other religious miscellaneous items. One night, my uncle and John decided to camp next to a huge elm tree to cover their tent from the winds. They ate heated beans and rice while talking and exchanging stories. Every night, they'd use a portable radio to talk with people in the base area, exchanging news. At some point, my uncle's colleague went into the woods to empty his bladder, and my uncle waited by the fire. After some time passed and my uncle didn't hear John returning, He began looking around but saw nothing. The wind started blowing stronger, and the woods became strangely quiet, with no natural sounds you'd expect to hear at night. My uncle then heard a subtle whisper and a weak man's voice. He got up, grabbed his light and rifle, and went into the woods, calling for John. The voice got stronger as he approached until he heard John's voice calling for help. However, something felt off. The tone didn't match John's usual tone. A ball of anxiety grew in my uncle as he moved his light towards the sound, expecting to see John. Instead, he saw a tall, blurry figure with antlers like a moose's skull. The creature moved towards him, calling with John's voice but distorted and crackly. My uncle fired into the air, then turned and ran, hearing the creature's inhuman sound. He got lost but eventually found the trail in daylight. When he returned to the campsite, John was there, having heard my uncle's calls for help. They both believe they encountered a Wendigo, though my uncle is not entirely sure. It's speculated to be of the supernatural. When I was in college, I worked a couple of odd jobs to help pay the bills. They were mostly mundane, but one shook me to my core. I was working for the City Parks and Lakes Division at a local lake. It was a job that did involve some hard work, cleaning and repairing the boats and motors, but it also had more than enough downtime. Whenever there was no work to do, my coworkers and I would sit around in the shade on the dock and talk. When I first started, it was mostly the other guys telling me stories about the lake. Most of them were your run-of-the-mill fisherman stories, but there were a few with a much darker feel. It wasn't long before I started to have my own odd and unders in the park. I split my time working there between the boat dock and working night security in the campgrounds. One night as I was driving the work truck around the lake into the campgrounds, part of my hourly patrol, I saw a pale blue light just above the road, probably 100 feet in front of my truck. As I got close, the light grew in intensity, then when I was about 30 feet away it took on a smoky appearance and dissipated in the night sky. That incident was definitely odd, but not at all in a scary sort of way. The next two incidents I had during the night shift, which led to me refusing to work the shift anymore, were definitely more disturbing and physical. Maybe a month after I saw the floating light, I was driving down the hill from the campground back to the lake when I saw a man run out of the bushes. He was dirty, terrified, and wearing only his underwear. The first thought I had was that he was on drugs. The campground was cheap, so we did get our fair share of homeless drug addicts. I quickly realized that wasn't the case, however. The second he saw my truck, he came running towards me, clearly not looking to hurt me but rather for me to save him. When he was still a few yards away, I was going to open my window to ask what was wrong when suddenly I saw a second person run out of the bushes. This time it was a woman. Her t-shirt was torn and dirty, her legs scratched from running through the bushes without pants on. I was confused to say the least, but the confusion quickly turned to anxiety when I saw she was carrying a large knife. Obviously, this is what the man was running from. He didn't seem to notice her at first, so I motioned to the passenger door, hoping he would get it so we could drive off and call the police before she got too close. As I was motioning to him was when he spotted her. He looked me in the eyes, and I could tell he knew he should run to the truck, but I watched as the panic overtook him, and he ran. The woman chased after, both heading across the road down into the brush towards the lake. I drove off to the park ranger station and called the police. I could hear the echoes of the man screaming and the woman's yelling. I talked to the police after they handled the situation. The man had been stabbed, but he would live. I went home, obviously shaken. 2 months after that, I was driving the truck through the campground and I saw what looked like a military-style duffel bag hanging from a tree. The closer I got, the more definition the shape took. By the time I was at the campsite, I already had the police on the phone. I could hear the wife sleeping in the tent, but I decided I would let the police wake her and inform her that her husband had hanged himself. I never worked the night shift again. I thought if I worked strictly during the day on the boat dock, all this would stop. I was wrong. I did work an entire summer without incident, but it was in the winter that it happened. It was a cold winter, by San Diego standards at least. Many times my shift would start before the sunrise, having to get the boats ready for all the fishermen coming in the early morning hours trying for trout. On one particular morning I got to work around 5 a.m. It was cold, in the mid-30s, with frost still on the ground. I walked straight onto the dock and into the shed we used as a workshop. Most of the mornings the only employees at the park were me, a young woman who worked the concession stand, and a park ranger. Often the park ranger would come down to the dock about 20 minutes into my shift to make sure I had everything I needed. On this morning I was inside the workshop with the door closed, space heater on, and was working on a broken motor. I could tell when another person walked onto the dock because it would make the whole dock bob slightly in the water. I felt the dock rise and fall beneath my feet and kept at my work, assuming it was just the ranger. I could tell the footsteps went up to the door, paused for a second, then continued towards the end of the dock. After about 5 minutes without feeling the footsteps return, I opened the door to see what the ranger was up to. I looked to the end of the dock and no one was there. I assumed I must have mistaken the slight waves of the water for footsteps, but noticed the water was smooth as glass, and that all the boats were tied up. I took a step out of the shop to get a better look and could hear the crunch of frost under my feet. When I looked down, I noticed that there were two sets of footprints. One was mine, going from the shore straight to the shop. The second went past the shop, down the edge of the dock, and stopped. There were no prints going off the dock. I turned and saw the ranger walk towards the dock down the shore. I quit once he got within earshot. So I was just in the Olympic National Forest last night because I went to visit Forks. On my way back to Seattle, I was driving down Highway 101 and it was snowing a ton. It was super dark out and I had stopped my car in the road for a moment, middle of nowhere, to look at the tall pine trees, which are gorgeous. It was really dark, but I took some pictures of the trees with night mode on my camera. And then I put my phone down and looked back out and there was suddenly this weird tall, skinny white or flash man-like creature perched up on a rotten log. It had no eyes but was facing me. Its arms were super long, in front of its body, while it crouched down. I obviously didn't stay long enough to look at what it might be, and it was really dark. I rolled up my car window and immediately left and didn't get out of my car. Any idea what it was? It was like 50 miles from Forks in the direction of the Ho Rainforest, in the darkest part of the forest. To summarize, we got to the forest a lot later than we should have, and didn't bother starting our fire until it was already dark. We heard some sticks snapping directly in front of us and got a little spooked, but tried to write it off as a deer. After that we saw an eye in the tree line, and then we started hearing the sound of a horse exhaling, you know, the really hard, loud, sound of breathing out through the nose. We heard it from our right, then behind us, then to the left of us. So we didn't necessarily see anything, but between the sounds and the eye it was enough to get us both pretty spooked, which is rare. So, I was urban exploring, urbexing, at an abandoned phosphate mine last night located in Central Florida, and myself and a friend heard a noise that I can't quite explain. For reference, this location is surrounded by nothing but farms and distant mines for like 10 to 15 miles, and it has been abandoned since roughly 2008. I heard the noise in question while walking down one of the roads after the sun had set. It was just me and my three friends when my friend and I heard it. It sounded like a retching noise mixed with a scream, medium in pitch but guttural. It was way too loud for both of us to have imagined it. I used to be a park ranger in my previous job, so I'm pretty familiar with the wildlife in the area, and it didn't sound like anything I have heard during my time working as a ranger near that area. I've also explored the location multiple times prior and had a few weird experiences, but nothing like this. Does anyone have any idea what I could have heard? I once saw something similar camping in Brennan. I was in a doorless cabin or shelter at Camp Parsons and I woke up unable to move or speak. 30 yards away it was staring at me from behind a tree. As much as something without eyes can stare. Long arms and torso, dark clothing, white skin with discernible no facial features. I tried as hard as I could to scream and wake up the other campers, but I couldn't make a noise. I remember fighting against paralysis to hold my head up to watch it. Like something awful would happen if I dropped my attention for even a moment. Next thing I remember, I was awake. So many weird stories out there. Finding a blood-stained altar deep off trail. Unexplained noises at night. Coming back from a multi-troop overnight wilderness survival excursion with the count wrong. One extra kid. It was 1998. I was 37 years old. I was working with the Forest Department for 12 years at that point. There was a fire in the Apalachicola National Forest that summer. The Bradwell Bay area was on fire when all this happened. The fire was raging pretty badly at this point. We didn't know if we would ever get it out. That morning, I had reported to the command center on Helen Guard Station Road to get briefed on what I would be doing that day. So me and another guy were given the task of driving around looking for animals along the road of the Bradwell Bay area. Animals would make it to the road and usually fall out if they were injured or had really bad smoke inhalation. Our job was to pick them up and take them to the vets at the command center. The vets would treat them and on some occasions euthanize the ones that wouldn't make it. So we were driving around the area heading south doing about 45 miles per hour. Faster than I should have been driving. I was talking to my partner and didn't realize how fast I was going. All of a sudden we saw a black figure run out of the woods on all fours. It ran right up under my driver's side tire. I hit the animal with both the front and back tires. I was driving a 95 Dodge Ram 4x4. So I knew at that speed I had killed it. Immediately we thought it was a bear. We got out to pick the bear up and put it in the truck. Upon further investigation, we realized what I had hit was not a bear at all. It was a creature that neither one of us had ever seen. It was about 6 feet tall. It had legs, kneecaps, and feet just like me and you. The arms hung to about the knee. One arm, a matter of fact, was down by its knee. The other one was up over its head. I had run the creature over under its right underarm, across the shoulder blade, and over the back of its neck. The creature was covered in hair. About 3 to 5 inches long on the arms, legs, and head. The hair on the back, ribs, and chest was much shorter. The muscle definition of the animal was phenomenal. It looked like a prize fighter or one of the guys you would see in the UFC. We flipped the animal over. The jaw was broken from where I had hit it with the truck. I could see it had a protruding snout much like that of a baboon or what you would think a werewolf looks like. It had eyes just like us. The thing looked a lot like a chimpanzee. We quickly radioed into the command center and they sent 2 FWC officials out to our location. Within about 15 minutes, the FWC officials arrived and they told us they had never seen anything like it. So we all picked the animal up and loaded it into the back of their truck. The animal weighed about 300 to 400 pounds, which dead weight is a lot. They told us they would figure out what it was and let us know. So we had been contacted by the command center at this point and they told us to come on back and make a statement about what we saw. So we showed up at the command center and immediately we were brought back to a room where we were to fill out an incident report. We were about 10 minutes into the incident report when we were asked to stop and wait and that some people were coming to see us. Within about 30 to 45 minutes, two government officials showed up. They walked us out to the vehicle. They were asking where we ran over the thing. We told them where it was and so they examined the area. The truck had no damage. There was a black steel bumper on the front. The animal hit the bottom of that and the tires took care of the rest. There was really nothing on the truck except for the undercarriage. There was blood and hair. The officials collected the blood and hair samples and put them away. Next, they asked us if we would get into the vehicle they came in and take them to the location where we had run the animal over. So we complied, got into the vehicle, and left with the gentleman. It was a rather quiet ride back out to the spot. They didn't say much at all except for a couple of exchanges with each other. We showed up at the spot and walked them through what happened. Then all of a sudden one of the guys, I guess the guy in charge, turned and looked at us and said, "Congratulations, fellas, you ran over a bear." I said, "Sir, but this is no bear that we hit." He quickly interrupted me with, "You don't understand, you ran over a bear." He then said that every time I tell anybody about this, I run over a bear. I was to never speak a word about what we actually hit. That I could face charges. My whole retirement could go away. They said I could lose my job and that they would slander me and make me look like a fool. So I looked at my partner and we had no other choice but to comply. On the ride back, it kind of struck me as odd that this was an actual government cover-up. They knew what this thing was that we had hit. They had seen them before and now they had a body. For some reason, they didn't want anyone to know and they were going to great lengths to keep this under wraps. The main reason I'm telling my story is, I'm hoping one of the other three people, my partner and the two FWC officials, will come forward. I figure it's a lot harder to silence four people than it is just one. People need to know that these things are out there and that they are real. Theodore Roosevelt's Bigfoot story. It was told to me by a grizzled, weather-beaten old mountain hunter named Bauman, who was born and had passed all his life on the frontier. He must have believed what he said, for he could hardly repress a shudder at certain points of the tales. When the event occurred, Bauman was still a young man, and was trapping with a partner among the mountains dividing the forks of the Salmon from the head of Wisdom River. Not having had much luck, he and his partner determined to go up into a particularly wild and lonely pass through which ran a small stream said to contain many beaver. The pass had an evil reputation because the year before, a solitary hunter who had wandered into it was there slain, seemingly by a wild beast, the half-eaten remains being afterwards found by some mining prospectors who had passed his camp only the night before. The memory of this event, however, weighed very lightly with the two trappers, who were as adventurous and hardy as others of their kind. They then struck out on foot through the vast, gloomy forest, and in about 4 hours reached a little open glade where they concluded to camp, as signs of game were plenty. There was still an hour or two of daylight left, and after building a brush lean-to and throwing down and opening their packs, they started upstream. At dusk they again reached. They were surprised to find that during their absence something, apparently a bear, had visited camp, and had rummaged about among their things, scattering the contents of their packs, and in sheer wantonness destroying their lean-to. The footprints of the beast were quite plain, but at first they paid no particular heed to them, busying themselves with rebuilding the lean-to, laying out their beds and stores, and lighting the fire. While Bauman was making ready supper, it being already dark, his companion began to examine the tracks more closely, and soon took a brand from the fire to follow them up, where the intruder had walked along a game trail after leaving the camp. Coming back to the fire, he stood by it a minute or two, peering out into the darkness, and suddenly remarked, "Bauman, that bear has been walking on two legs." Bauman laughed at this, but his partner insisted that he was right, and upon again examining the tracks with a torch, they certainly did seem to be made by but two paws, or feet. However, it was too dark to make sure. After discussing whether the footprints could possibly be those of a human being, and coming to the conclusion that they could not be, the two men rolled up in their blankets, and went to sleep under the lean-to. At midnight, Bauman was awakened by some noise, and sat up in his blankets. As he did so, his nostrils were struck by a strong, wild beast odor, and he caught the loom of a great body in the darkness at the mouth of the lean-to. Grasping his rifle, he fired at the vague, threatening shadow, but must have missed, for immediately afterwards he heard the smashing of the underwood as the thing, whatever it was, rushed off into the impenetrable blackness of the forest and the night. After this the two men slept but little, sitting up by the rekindled fire, but they heard nothing more. In the morning they started out to look at the few traps they had set the previous evening and put out new ones. By an unspoken agreement they kept together all day, and returned to camp towards evening. On nearing it they saw, hardly to their astonishment, that the lean-to had been again torn down. The visitor of the preceding day had returned, and in wanton malice had tossed about their camp kit and bedding, and destroyed the shanty. The ground was marked up by its tracks, and on leaving the camp it had gone along the soft earth by the brook, where the footprints were as plain as if on snow. And, after a careful scrutiny of the trail, it certainly did seem as LF, whatever the thing was. It had walked off on but two legs. The men, thoroughly uneasy, gathered a great heap of dead logs, and kept up a roaring fire throughout the night, one or the other sitting on guard most of the time. About midnight the thing came down through the forest opposite, across the brook, and stayed there on the hillside for nearly an hour. They could hear the branches crackle as it moved about, and several times it uttered a harsh, grating, long-drawn moan, a peculiarly sinister sound. Yet it did not venture near the fire. In the morning the two trappers, after discussing the strange events of the last 36 hours, decided that they would shoulder their packs and leave the valley that afternoon. All the morning they kept together, picking up trap after trap, each one empty. On first leaving camp they had the disagreeable sensation of being followed. In the dense spruce thickets they occasionally heard a branch snap after they had passed, and now and then there were slight rustling noises among the small pines to one side of them. At noon they were back within a couple of miles of camp. In the high, bright sunlight their fears seemed absurd to the two armed men, accustomed as they were, through long years of lonely wandering in the wilderness to face every kind of danger from man, brute, or element. There were still three beaver traps to collect from a little pond in a wide ravine nearby. Bauman volunteered to gather these and bring them in, while his companion went ahead to camp and made ready the packs. Reaching the pond, Bauman found three beavers in the traps, one of which had been pulled loose and carried into a beaver house. He took several hours in securing and preparing the beaver, and when he started homewards he marked, with some uneasiness, how low the sun was getting. At last he came to the edge of the little glade where the camp lay, and shouted as he approached it, but got no answer. The campfire had gone out, though the thin blue smoke was still curling upwards. Near it lay the packs wrapped and arranged. At first Bauman see nobody, nor did he receive an answer to his call. Stepping forward he again shouted, and as he did so his eye fell on the body of his friend, stretched beside the trunk of a great fallen spruce. Rushing towards it the horrified trapper found that the body was still warm, but that the neck was broken, while there were four great fang darks in the throat. The footprints of the unknown beast creature, printed deep in the soft soil, told the whole story. The unfortunate man, having finished his packing, had sat down on the spruce log with his face to the fire, and his back to the dense woods, to wait for his companion. It had not eaten the body, but apparently had romped and gambled round it in uncouth, ferocious glee, occasionally rolling over and over it, and had then fled back into the soundless depths of the woods. Bauman, utterly unnerved, and believing that the creature with which he had to deal was something either half-human or half-devil, some great goblin beast, abandoned everything but his rifle and struck off a speed down the pass, not halting until he reached the beaver meadows where the hobbled ponies were still grazing. Mounting, he rode onwards through the night, until far beyond the reach of pursuit. There are many other states in the United States that have reported giant creatures that roam about their mountain wildernesses. However, I do not have enough verified information to fully go into it at the present time. Anyway, that would be another book. Theodore Roosevelt. A few years ago at a family gathering, my brother casually mentioned to my sister and I that his wife had seen a UFO and that it had scared the crap out of her. When my sis and I approached her, she wouldn't talk about it. So we decided on New Year's Eve to get her nice and buzzed and then try to get the story out of her again. Well, she was more than buzzed when we brought it up, and you could see her face change, becoming upset. We kept at it, trying to coax it out of her until she finally told us the following. My brother and she live in a very rural part of Naples, Florida, near where my mother's house is. She woke one morning from a nightmare coincidentally about UFOs, which is why I suspect this whole thing might have been some sort of waking dream, and went out onto her porch for a cigarette. Outside, parked on the street in front of her house, was a glowing saucer-shaped ship. Coming out of it, dressed in what she described as combat armor and holding weapons. All were a group of 7-foot-tall reptilian humanoids. She said they were very massively built and evil-looking. She started backing away in terror when one of them turned to her. Then in her head, she said it didn't move its mouth. She heard, "Go back inside, we're not here for you." Then the figures crossed the street to the house across from hers. She turned and scampered back into her place and hid, not daring to look outside for a good while. Apparently, her daughter was also involved in this sighting, but this is as much of this story as my sister and I could get out of her. I know this sounds ridiculous, but if you heard her telling it and saw how she sobered up very quickly while doing so, it might creep you out as much as it did us at the time. At one point she broke into tears and hysteria, so we asked her to stop and never approach the subject with her again. We've never asked the daughter about it. My brother says he slept through the whole thing. Before I begin, a bit of background. I'm 28 years old and I live in Kent, England. Ever since I was a kid, I've always had this weird obsession with the United States, traveling through the states and generally seeing lots of sights. I'm not a city guy, far from it. My parents are both farmers and I like the outdoors a lot. I joined a rock climbing club when I was in my teens and met two good friends, James and Grant, who came on the trip with me in 2012. I had always planned to go to the States, Colorado to be specific, because of the forests and the mountains. We all agreed to go, saved for a year, and off we went. We were in Denver and later we traveled south. Through Colorado Springs, down to Walsenburg, and then headed west and ended up in a very small town after about 4 to 5 hours, somewhere close to the New Mexico border. We had actually got there due to meeting some friends in Denver, who were keen explorers like ourselves, and they asked if we wanted to join them on a road trip or camping trip. So we did. There were 5 of them: Chris, another James, Richard, Melissa, and Lucy. And us 3, myself, James, and Grant. The first 2 nights were great. Chris and Richard liked to hunt and had brought alone their rifles with them, and they taught us a few things about shooting and whatnot. On the 3rd night, all 8 of us went on a little walk through the forest, having a look around and taking all the amazing views in. The girls, Lucy and Melissa, wanted to head back to the cabin to start cooking the dinner for us, and Richard went back with them. So, Chris, the 2 James, Grant, and I roamed around. Up ahead on the trail, I pointed out to Chris, I saw what looked like a deer, but as quick as I could grab their attention and turn back around, it was gone. I'd probably made way too much noise, to be honest, and scared it off. But a few minutes later, I saw it again.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Again. It was a little weird though. It looked a little darker than a deer, and had more fur. It didn't look right at all. It was like a man on all fours or something and just didn't seem to move very smoothly. I must have been so focused on this deer that I was completely oblivious to the smell that surrounded us that Grant pointed out. It smelled like death and blood, but it seemed warm and metallic. It was horrible. I asked Chris if there was some kind of factory nearby, but he said there wasn't really anything like that for miles. I really did smell. It was stomach turning, and I have a strong stomach from living on a farm for my whole life. We turned back anyway to head towards the cabin to meet the others. We walked for about 10 minutes when I saw what looked like the same deer in the distance to my right, and I swear to God it stood up on its hind legs. I called Chris at the front and said to the others to look to the right, and they did. James laughed and said it looked like a guy, and Grant suggested it was another group of people out walking as well. But I told them it stood up and that it was the deer from earlier I tried to get them to look at. I was adamant about it. But they looked at me like I was stupid, as it was definitely a figure of a person with his back to us. Chris called out at it and there was no reply. He called again and nothing. Then we all shouted out, "Are you okay over there?" The reply was subtle but loud enough to be heard, "It's Richard." We all looked at each other confused because he was supposed to be with the girls. He called out again, "It's Richard," and it definitely sounded like him. Chris told him to stop screwing around and we carried on walking. I looked back after no more than 5 or 10 seconds and he was gone, completely. That was no way enough time to just disappear without seeing him run off. We got back to the cabin eventually. Lucy and Melissa were in the kitchen making dinner and Richard was chilling with them. Chris told Richard to not leave the girls again, as he was the only one with them and it wasn't safe to leave them alone due to wild animals. But Richard said he'd been here the whole time with them. Confusing. Chris, Grant, the two James and I looked at each other and laughed, telling him we saw him in the woods with us and you said it's Richard when we shouted at him. But he looked at us with a dead straight face, "Seriously guys, I was here the whole time and the girls confirmed it." We all just shrugged it off. The three of them were in on the joke, they got us. I managed to wake up around 3 a.m. very thirsty and needed a drink, and that rank smell was back. The smell probably woke me up, to be honest. I went into the kitchen to get a drink of water and I could hear rustling from outside. It wasn't like someone was walking, but it sounded like someone was crawling around. I turned on the outside light, which didn't do much at all, but about 20 meters away at the edge of the forest, I saw another figure. It was very dark outside and I'm sure I was just seeing things, but the figure was like yesterday, just there, motionless, a black figure silhouette with its back turned towards me. I was freaking out. I went back to the bedrooms and woke up the boys. They weren't really 100% awake yet, probably pissed off I'd woken them up, but when I showed them what I was looking at they soon came around. James opened the cabin door, which was facing where the person was, to get a better view, and we all huddled around the door entrance to see also. Chris had a huge mag light torch on him and just shone it at the figure and it didn't move. Grant shouted out, in a typical British way, "Oi, you!" Which just made us laugh, but the figure didn't move. We were pretty alarmed by this point and we decided to go back inside. As we turned around to go back in, we heard "It's Richard." We all just looked at each other and we all looked at Richard and chaos ensured. I and the others had no idea what the hell to do. Richard wasn't, to my knowledge, a guy who could throw his voice, but the voice was his and Richard did not speak. We waited for what seemed like a lifetime for the sun to come up, constantly checking outside. Richard and Chris's rifles never left their hands. We grabbed the girls and just left as fast as we could. Sorry, I know there isn't much of a spectacular ending, but I wanted to at least share what we saw. I hope this makes some kind of sense. I was an investigator with CID from 2004 to 2009 and served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Most of my work was related to various schemes, bribery, money laundering, theft, etc., by enlisted personnel. In 2005, I was informed that I would be embedded with an army infantry unit in a mountainous region in the Sulaymaniyah Governorate, Iraqi Kurdistan, northeast Iraq. Once I reached my assigned location, we were briefed on strange activity that had occurred in a particular area just a few miles from the Iranian border. We started the investigation by reading reports that came from a few local villagers and Kurdish military, Peshmerga, who stated that people were being hunted in the mountains by an unknown creature. One man told me that the locals called it a ghoul. He had never seen it, but it was described as a tall man-like creature with long arms and legs who fed on human flesh. I reported the information I gathered to my superiors after returning to the unit HQ. A few days later, I was ordered to return to the area of the strange activity and investigate further. An infantry squad with squad leader was assigned to accompany me. The general consensus was that it was likely a soldier who left his post, AWOL, and went crazy and started causing problems. Armed conflict can induce the worst in people to surface. If this was the case and the individual was killing non-combatants, our job would be formidable. After a few days of surveillance and searching, we had no clue of what we were dealing with. If this was indeed a soldier or other civilian man, we would have seen him or gathered some evidence. I was starting to believe that this was a wild goose chase, but the villagers were animate that there was something hunting them. One evening, the squad leader and I were going over a report when we were alarmed by a god-awful scream that came from the direction of a mountain pass that we had just searched a few hours before. A few local people who had been outside quickly made their way home. It was obvious that they had heard this scream before. Within the hour, the squad and I were slowly entering the pass. It was night, but the moon was very bright, so we were able to see around a bit. We searched the entire area for several hours using night vision and high-intensity lights. We found nothing, not a footprint or remnant from any creature fitting the description. I have always wondered what we heard that night. I have asked a few learned people for their opinion, but with little satisfaction. There were many strange instances in Iraq that just never made the light of day. I heard of some, but I'm positive most were just filed away. A man once paid me to be hunted for sport. I had stumbled across his post when I was browsing the web for work. I was looking for some sort of side gig to pass the time. I was at a bit of a crossroads in my life. I had quit my previous job to break away from the redundancy it had sucked me into. It was a spontaneous decision with no real planning involved. Luckily, in this day and age, the internet caters to people like me, people who don't care about chasing money or don't want to be tied down. It wasn't the money I was after, but the change it would provide. I felt like I couldn't enjoy anything in life, like I was just going through the motions. That night I had been scrolling for quite some time, skimming over job posts, help wanted here, shorthanded there. I didn't think I would find anything to suit me. It all seemed like the same thing disguised under a different title. That was, until I found this particular ad. I thought it was a scam at first. Comical dollar signs on each side of the Craigslist title, like a trap set for the elderly in search of credit card numbers. I clicked on it anyway, curiosity getting the better of me. In all caps, the posting read, "Big money for manhunt volunteer." At least it was to the point. The details below gave a brief introduction as to what the job entailed. I skimmed over them with amusement, half of me doubting it was true, the other half hoping it was. As ridiculous as the prospect was, I had to admit, it was exciting. There were some requirements for the job, however, and I was surprised to find that I fit the bill. Must be male. Must be young, and fit if possible. Must not be afraid of the dark. Must come alone. No cell phones, no firearms, no police. Must meet the night before to discuss. The list went on for a while, but ultimately ended with a phone number and a typed signature as someone simply named Bob. I found myself thinking it over. I didn't exactly have anything to lose. No family nor friends. I always lived alone. The idea of wanting to pack up at moment's notice never seemed to sit well with any of the significant others I had in the past. I don't know if it was stupidity or the need for adventure, but in the end I found myself grabbing my phone. I mean, how often do people get to say they were hunted for sport? The money wouldn't hurt either. I gave him a ring. The man who answered the call was tipsy but eager, and when I mentioned my interest in his post, he seemed to be ecstatic. Like I was calling to give him the lead role in a movie. The conversation was a little awkward considering the reasoning behind the call itself, but after a few minutes of cryptic back and forth we agreed on a meeting place. I was a few towns away, but he insisted I met him closer to his side of the woods. The hunt would be at his estate, and I should stay in town so I was well rested for the event. We would meet at a local bar called the Sixth Shot, to discuss terms and conditions. He seemed determined, like he had been waiting for someone for a while. He said he would understand if I was in no hurry, but with my current status of unemployment and lack of overall plans, I found myself matching his energy. I had to admit, the concept was a little exciting, if it was real at all. We decided to meet the next day. The Sixth Shot was a bustling little place. A neon sign with a smoking gun made it easy to find. When I arrived, I found the guy immediately. He looked about how you'd expect a manhunter to look like. He pulled it off well, a black polo and tan cargos, a shiny shaved head with a thick curled mustache, all worn on a very tan and muscular body. He was sitting at the bar alone, and he lit up like a Christmas tree when he saw me. Like he knew. He patted the stool next to him, like he was welcoming a long-lost friend. When I crossed the bar, I was met with a firm handshake and a pat on the shoulder. He told me he was delighted to meet me, and drinks were on him. After a brief introduction, he got a glass of top-shelf bourbon for himself while I sipped on an Irish red ale. I had acquired a taste for it recently. Considering he was trying to hire me with the intent to murder me, he seemed like a pretty cool guy. We got to know each other a little before getting to the serious stuff. The people around enjoying their drinks none the wiser. The man known as Bob was actually Robert Callahan, a man born into a world of wealth and, as it seemed, perpetual boredom. His father ran a very successful chain of automotive stamping companies that he inherited from his grandfather. By the time his father passed, there were so many buildings and people assigned to making the gears turn efficiently across the globe without his input, he was able to live a life of leisure on a seven-figure income without as much as lifting a finger. The companies ran themselves as he grew older, and he filled his young adult years with seeking thrills across the globe. He tried anything that got his adrenaline pumping, from skydiving to whitewater rafting. He took a liking to hunting, which he said had started an escapade of finding the world's most dangerous predators and killing them, no matter the cost. He said he had seen it all, but in all his years there was one thing he hadn't bagged, a human. I laughed at his extraordinary lifestyle, feeling a bit mundane when it was my turn to share stories. Mine was far from exciting. I left the more boring bits out, but I told him I spent most of my 20s as a park ranger. It kept me close to nature and outdoors, but when it's all you look at, it tends to lose its luster. I left that to be a cab driver in the big city, something that kept me in transit and entertained for a while. Always moving, with so many people to observe in the busy city life. But in time I found myself too contained to the city itself, which was why I recently quit. Which brings me about to where I was now, discussing being hunted by another man. He was fascinated, jotting down notes in a little pocketbook while he sipped his bourbon. We conversed for a time. I finished a couple of beers and he ordered another pour of bourbon. The conversation was nice. It had been a while since the last time I went out with friends. Despite the fun I was having, we couldn't beat around the bush forever. When it came time to discuss the actual terms of our agreement, his face turned serious. I would be paid $5,000 tonight, granted I still wanted to go through with it. He said this would help me settle accounts before the event. He said he owned a mansion outside of town, with over 30 acres of forest land. He was outside city limits, his nearest neighbor was 6 miles away. No one would hear screams or gunshots. We would start tomorrow night. I was supposed to get to his estate at 10 p.m. After my arrival, I would get 15 minutes to head into the forest as a head start. He explained when the 15 minutes were up, he would promptly signal with a flare. If I had any second thoughts, I needed to address them and withdraw from the woods before the signal. If I was still in the woods when the flare went off, I would be shot on sight. He said I would be paid $10,000 an hour as I survived. The hunt would go on until dawn, and if I was still alive come daybreak, I would be free. He would be armed with a hunting rifle and a combat knife, I would be armed with my wits. It was evident it wasn't in his plans for me to survive, but that was something I had already come to terms with. He studied my face when he said these things, perhaps trying to gauge my reaction. I tried my best to play it cool, despite being a little nervous. Does any of this bother you? He eventually asked, downing the last of his drink. No. Not really. I've always just tried to go with the flow and doing that made me stumble upon your offer. Maybe if I get out and live a little, it'll encourage me to settle down for a bit more. That is, if I make it out alive. I winked, and we both had a laugh. Man, you're a riot. If I wasn't trying to kill you, I'd think we'd be pretty good friends. After all the details were ironed out, he paid the tab and it was time for us to take our leave. We shook on it before going our separate ways. He was excited for the next day, a pep in his step carrying him to his obnoxiously lifted truck. He burned out as he left, almost rear-ending a Buick as he left the parking lot. I watched him go, feeling oddly serene in the cool night air. It was hard to describe. There was no one waiting for me to come back. No one to give me a courtesy call if I didn't turn up. I don't know if it was the thrill of the challenge or just the drastic break in monotony. I spent my life trying to not be a creature of habit. Maybe this would be the last shift off course. Or maybe tomorrow I would just die and not have to worry about it anymore. With the moon shining bright and the cool breeze on my back, I decided I would take a walk before sleeping in my car for the night. It might be my last time to enjoy a night like this. I woke the next day in the back seat of my car, feeling oddly rejuvenated despite my choice of bed for the night. Through the blinding afternoon rays, I found my phone and checked my bank account. He was a man of his word. The $5,000 had been wired as promised. I decided I would head into town and indulge in some of the local variety and find a place to shower before it was time to meet Robert at the estate. I climbed into the front seat and left the bar parking lot. On my way into town, I called my landlord and canceled my lease. I was already living in and out of boxes and my lease was month to month, so I wouldn't exactly be missed. After getting something to eat, I called and canceled all utility accounts for my apartment, electricity, internet, stuff like that. I had already put in my resignation at the cab company. There wasn't really any ties to my life at my apartment. I would either survive till dawn and get the biggest payday of my life, or not have to worry about the next step if I failed. Either way, this was the end of the current chapter in my life. After spending the day around town, I found myself driving to Robert's property, the sun already making its way into the horizon. His driveway was long and winding, leading to a gigantic house that looked like the surrounding forest was trying to swallow it. When I pulled up, it was already almost dark. A butler greeted me at the mansion, an old man carrying a silver tray covered in a soft cloth. He opened the car door and let me out, introducing himself only as Charles. I'll be taking your belongings now. If you don't make it out, they will be destroyed at sunrise. He held out the tray. Of course, I said, handing over my phone, wallet, and keys. After placing them on the tray, he offered a smile. Would you like a refreshment before heading in? Mr. Callahan said to accommodate you before heading into the forest. He truly appreciates you answering his ad, Charles said. I'm fine, thank you. I guess I'd rather just get to it, I said, wiping my sweaty palms on my jeans. Of course. If you will just follow me, it's right this way. He gestured for me to follow him. Charles escorted me through the house. The inside was furnished top to bottom in luxurious wooden furniture. Bearskin rugs, chandeliers made of gold, paintings from the Renaissance era. The estate was definitely worth a fortune. We passed by a trophy room, filled wall to wall with mounts of animals from across the globe. They seemed to stare with their glass eyes, following us as we made our way through. Charles made no effort to engage in conversation and neither did I. The other end of the mansion consisted of a large patio. Waiting for us there was Robert, who seemed to be preparing for our little hunt. He was running a large combat knife over a whetstone, slowly and methodically as we approached. Propped up next to him was his rifle. The bolt was pulled back, several cartridges laid out on a glass table. Next to it was the flare gun. The time is approaching, said Charles, and Robert nodded. He wiped the blade off and sheathed it on his belt. I looked at his loadout on the table, starting to feel sick to my stomach. This was seriously happening. Now that I was here and seeing him fully prepared, I couldn't help but feel like I was in over my head. Robert stood and grabbed his rifle. He picked up each .308 cartridge and loaded them slowly, one at a time until it was full. He racked the bolt forward and slung the rifle on his shoulder and grabbed the flare gun. 15 minutes. Then the flare. Having second thoughts? He said, twirling the flare gun on his finger. No. Not really, I said, making my way off the patio. I wasn't exactly sure what to say in a situation such as this, so I figured it was best to just get it going. Excellent. I'll see you on the other side. He saluted me and Charles gave me a nod. I turned and left the patio, making my way to the woods. Each step got heavier as I approached the trees, the darkness behind them getting eerier the closer I got. When I got to the tree line, I looked back at the mansion. Robert and Charles just watched expectantly. I swallowed and ducked in, feeling the full weight of my decision perhaps a little too late. Once the mansion was no longer visible, I started jogging. I was mindful of my footsteps, a stray log or vine could trip me up. During my time as a park ranger, I spent dozens of hours hiking trails. I would survey the land weekly, picking up discarded things like trash and lost clothing. This landscape was much different, however. The ground was uneven, years of collected leaves burying fallen limbs and jutting rocks. I was wearing decent boots, but terrain was unforgiving. One misplaced step and I could roll or break an ankle. I wouldn't be able to rush too much. If I could just maintain a steady pace, I would be able to put enough distance between us and maybe find a decent place to hide. With the sun set and no light source, I couldn't see very far in front of me. I tried not to think about how much time had passed. I just focused on pushing forward. Ahead, the trees started to crowd, giant maples with lush branches blocking the moonlight that was trying to shine in. I ducked under them quickly. A twisted branch snagged my shirt, and I shook it loose. Birds screeched and rousted from their perch, flapping away in a panic at my presence. Their cries echoing into the night, sending a chill down my spine. There's nothing to be afraid of, I thought to myself. Not yet, at least. I came to a small clearing, and I took a second to catch my breath. I leaned on a tree, shaking clumps of mud and pine needles from my boots. The ground was wetter than I had anticipated. Off in the distance behind me there was an echoing pop. I looked to see the flare reaching toward the sky, a little orange ball of fire. I pushed off the tree and continued. I had to keep moving. I ran across the clearing, each step squishing on the ground as I went. On my third stride my boot stepped on something awkward and hard. By the time I heard the clicking sound I knew it was already too late. The sudden force clamping both sides of my ankle I could help but cry in pain. I stumbled awkwardly to the ground, agony shooting up my leg as the wind was knocked out of me. I looked down at the bear trap, blood oozing from where the metal jaws were buried. I was frustrated at my foolishness. Of course, he had trapped the woods. Why wouldn't he? I forced the jaws apart, the mechanism creaking, begging to bite down again. My hands shook holding the slippery metal, and when my leg was barely free, I let it snap shut. The steel-on-steel bite clacked into the night, the sound so loud it bounced through the trees. A second later there was an excited whooping noise. He heard it. He would be coming. I tried to see my ankle in the dark. There were nasty gashes on either side, but I didn't think it was broken. I got back up. It would hold weight, it just hurt like hell. I wanted to look back, but I pushed forward. Panic started to set in. Trying to regulate my breathing, I moved as quickly as I could, one strong step, one babied limp. I scanned the ground, looking out for more traps. There would be more, surely. Branches whipped at my cheeks and pulled at my clothes. I tried to be more careful, but I just couldn't see them quick enough. My left foot squelched in its boot with every step, blood soaking through my sock and into the laces. I pressed on, hurtling a large dead log. I had to find a spot to hide for a moment, catch my breath. My heart was racing. I was having trouble thinking rationally as I could with the situation. An icy feeling of fear washed over me for the first time in a long time. I had gotten what I wanted, a thrill to make me feel alive. But as I looked down at my mangled leg, I was starting to regret it. Gunfire cracked in the distance. A branch next to my ear exploded, specks of bark and dust hitting my face from the racing bullet. I threw myself to the ground and started crawling, dragging my injured ankle with. I dragged myself to a large pine tree and I sat behind it, trying to come up with a plan. The gun went off again, closer this time. The round punched into the tree, shaking loose needles that fell from above. I squinted in the dark, trying to see ahead. In front of me the ground started to slope, and I could faintly make out the sound of rushing water. It could be a creek or a small river. Keeping behind the large pine I slowly stood, trying to stay concealed until I was ready. I pushed off it and started to run for the slope, hearing the gunfire again as soon as I was in view. A fierce pain ripped through my shoulder and my arm went limp, but I couldn't stop. I started down the hill. I could see the shimmering surface of the creek below. There was something bobbing in the water, rotted logs from the looks of it. I needed to get there, get under the water and use the logs as cover. I worked my way down the slope. The ground was wet, each step threatened to slide out from under me. There were footsteps now, breaking sticks and brushing trees as they tried to catch up. Another gunshot. The bullet whizzed over my head and missed. I tried to go faster and crouch down, but my feet were too unstable. I focused on the water, limping closer and closer like it was my salvation. I was almost there. Behind me I could hear the racking of the bolt action, and I shot a panic look behind me. I could barely see him working through the trees, 20 yards away. As I turned back to the creek, my good foot got caught on something and I fell forward. I hit the ground hard and started to roll, painfully and awkwardly in the dark. I watched my descent in a swirl of moonlight and darkness, my elbows and knees clubbed by the earth as I went. I came to a stop at the edge of the water, lying on my back gasping for air. I could hardly move, my vision spinning as I looked at the sky. I could hear him coming down the hill slowly and carefully. He knew he had won, he was taking his time. Exhausted and defeated, I looked at the creek. It wasn't logs I had seen floating, but bodies. Several of them, bloated and rotting in the clear glow of the moon. The more I looked around, the more I saw. Men, women, children. I'm not sure what I expected. Robert was there now, boots squishing as he looked down at me. A pair of black goggles were over his eyes, a wicked grin on his face. He unslung his rifle and let it fall to the ground, then pulled the goggles off his face. He cast them aside like toys. Disappointing. Very disappointing. I thought with you being a park ranger and all, you'd make it further. But here we are, at the creek. They never make it past the creek. Robert cracked his knuckles and pulled the knife from his belt. He held the knife in both hands and brought it down, aiming for my heart. I put up my hands to fight him, but it only delayed the inevitable. He worked free from my grasp and elbowed me in the head, a blow that sent my vision blurring once more. My arms went slack and he buried the knife in my chest, my lung collapsing as the blade went in. With a grunt he pulled the blade down, separating my torso down the middle in a nasty gushing mess. Satisfied, he got up, and left me there to die. I tried to talk, but it all came out as gurgled whispers. What? What was that? He mocked, and he knelt to hear me. With the last of my breath I spoke my last two words, just loud enough for him to hear. Thank you. The involuntary screams came next. They were loud and shrill, broken vocal cords shouting in a mixture of barking and screeching. With both hands I pulled at the large incision, yanking the flesh apart in a spray of blood and disintegrating organs. His reaction was the same as all others before him, a look of pure irrational fear. My thin, inky black limbs burst from the gaping wound in my torso. I was on him in an instant, slashing the knife away and digging my nails into his flesh. I ripped his shirt like paper and separated his chest just he like did to me, my piercing screeches ringing into the night until I burrowed so deep they could no longer be heard. He thrashed and oozed from every orifice as he made room for me, just as the cab driver did, and the park ranger before him. I ate and wriggled as he expired, worming and digging my tiny frame into each limb like a suit. When the fit was just right, I stood up and cracked my knuckles. I looked at my reflection in the water, running a hand over my face to feel the new fit. Better than the last one, for sure. I took my time going back to the estate, making sure my walk was just right and everything was in place. The hours passed as I settled in, feeling more and more at home as I worked the joints and muscles. At daybreak, I emerged from the tree line, to find Charles on the patio waiting. He came to greet me immediately. Sir, this one had you out all night. Was this one better than the others? Can I get you something to drink? He said. Much better than the last. And bourbon, if you will.